Kitchen is a critical organization feeding 500,000 people each day with hot meals, a media spokesperson for the World Food Program in Gaza said, adding, "We can't afford to lose that."
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا يعني كثرة من ديمان كثرة من ديمان رابة تدري ديمان داري.
Regarding the holy month of Ramadan, the Holy Quran states, O you who have faith, prescribed for you is fasting as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary. Out of 365 days of a year, the Muslims are only obliged to fast for 30 days. This means that Allah does not want His people to be afflicted with hardships. Also, Allah banned the sick people or travelers from fasting during the month of Ramadan. This means that Allah wants His people to experience one of the best deeds of Islam in the most beautiful and sweet ways. In other words, Allah desires that the people taste the sweetness of fasting without having any type of fear in their hearts and soul. Thus, there is no type of force in the tone of Allah to oblige His people to fast. In the Holy Quran, there is no compulsion in the words of Allah regarding fasting during the holy month of Ramadan. Although fasting is an obligation for all the Muslims, Allah does not want to force His people to fast. We must learn how to preach Islam from the Holy Quran. Four of the important commands of Islam were established 15 years after the advent of Islam. These four deeds include paying khums and paying zakat, jihad, and fasting. This is a big lesson for us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qarati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the holy month of Ramadan, teaches us reliance upon Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the holy month of Ramadan quickly coming to an end. The last few programs that we have regarding this beautiful month, this month which is the holiest of months, it is the month in which its days are the best of days, its nights are the best of nights, its hours are the best of hours. You know, while we're in the holy month of Ramadan, we have a tendency to not to fully appreciate this blessing, and it is only after the ending of the holy month of Ramadan that we truly realize what a beautiful divine companion we have lost, as Imam Sajjad alayhi salam so eloquently speaks about in his du'as, some of which can be found in Sahifa Sajjadiya. This losing of this companion and, you know, all the things that we learned and the bounties and the blessings, and a lot of times we don't fully realize everything that we were gaining and achieving in this holy month of Ramadan, and the amount of rewards and blessings and love that was really showered upon every single one of us in this holy month of Ramadan, right? Many of us, unfortunately, we cannot look past the fasting and, you know, being thirsty and being hungry and having to control oneself, you know, so much. We kind of stop at that. We don't rise above these things and realize everything that we were acquiring. And to be honest with you, many of the things that we have acquired and achieved and have been blessed with in this holy month of Ramadan, you know, will be visible in the next life. We will see the fruits and the rewards, and really the countless blessings that Allah the Almighty has stored for every single one of us because
of this fasting and this obedience and this worship and this servitude and this obeying the commands of Allah that we did in the holy month of Ramadan.
Ramadanul Mustabin Jaa bin Nuril Mubin Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadanul Qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about reliance on Allah and how this is a primary and fundamental thing that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan. You know, of course, when you are fasting from the morning until the night, this is something that is difficult, you know, even though after these amount of days that have passed, we are slowly getting accustomed to this Islamic lifestyle. Because as we had said in our earlier programs in the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, this holy month of Ramadan teaches us a Islamic lifestyle, right? We rise above these basic material and worldly instincts such as eating and drinking, right? We also rise above our passions and these various different things. But one of the things that we learn is reliance on Allah, because fasting from morning until night for 29 or 30 days, this takes a lot of trust in the Almighty Allah. And really, those people who have a higher level of reliance and trust and tawakkul, as it is known in Arabic, upon the Almighty Allah, somewhat things become a little bit easier. Now, of course, the fasting in itself, nobody is saying that it becomes, you know, very easy. It still has its hardships, but, you know, one is able to bear those hardships a little bit easier, if you will, because you are trusting on this higher source, this supreme being. And I can tell you with all surety and certainty, you know, that the Almighty Allah, He helps those people who rely upon Him and who trust upon Him. It is our responsibility to trust Allah, and it is Allah's, you know, responsibility and duty to keep us in His divine protection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The limelight.
In the United States, a judge has ruled that migrant children who wake in makeshift camps along the U.S.-Mexico border for Border Patrol to process them are in the agency's custody and are subject to a long-standing agreement that sets standards for their treatment. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story. A federal judge in Los Angeles, California, ordered U.S. border officials to quickly process and relocate migrant children from makeshift open-air sites in Southern California, where advocates have documented squalid conditions. In a 12-page order issued on Wednesday, 3rd of April, Judge Dolly G. of the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California found that the children who federal officials have argued are not yet in U.S. custody, are entitled to the rights and protections offered to migrant minors under a long-standing Flores settlement agreement. Under that court settlement, the U.S. government agreed to provide basic services to migrant children, including by housing them in safe and sanitary facilities. U.S. District Court Judge Dolly G. concluded that while migrant children at the outdoor staging areas in Southern California have not been formally processed yet, they are still in the legal custody of the United States, since their movement is controlled by Border Patrol agents. At the center of the case are seven sites near San Diego and Jacumba Hot Springs in California, a remote area of Southern California where migrants have waited for hours or days before Border Patrol agents transfer them to brick-and-mortar detention facilities to formally process them. Advocates have said Border Patrol directs migrants to these sites. Citing declarations from advocates who visited the open-air sites, U.S. District Judge Dolly G. said migrant children at these locations often don't receive adequate food beyond crackers. Some of the sites have lacked a sufficient number of dumpsters and portable toilets, and the ones they do have are overflowing and unusable. The judge, Dolly G., added, "This means that the open-air sites not only have a foul smell, but also that trash is strewn about the sites, and class members are forced to relieve themselves outdoors." Over the past several years, U.S. District Judge Dolly G. has repeatedly found that the U.S. government under Republican and Democratic administrations has violated the Flores Agreement. In a statement, Customs and Border Protection, CBP, said it was reviewing Judge G.'s ruling. CBP will continue to transport vulnerable individuals and children encountered on the border to its facilities as quickly as possible, the agency said. For over a year, the government has left children suffering in dangerous and inhumane conditions at open-air detention sites, insisting that these children are not their responsibility, according to advocates for migrants. Nihar Desai, an attorney at the National Center for Youth Law. Nihar Desai added, "Thanks to the court's clear and consequential decision, the U.S. government can no longer pretend that children in the open-air detention sites are not in government custody. Border Patrol has recorded a sharp increase at migrant crossings in Southern California in recent months. In the first 5 months of fiscal year 2024, Border Patrol recorded nearly 152,000 migrant apprehensions in its San Diego sector, a 72% increase from fiscal year 2023, according to government data. In 2024, the San Diego sector has been the second busiest Border Patrol sector for illegal crossings, only behind Tucson, Arizona. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. Migrant children held in open-air desert camps are in federal custody and required to be expeditiously processed and placed in facilities that are safe and sanitary, a federal judge in California said in a court order late on Wednesday, 3rd of April. Judge Dolly G. wrote that U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, does maintain legal custody over the children in the open-air detention sites and has decision-making authority over the health and welfare of the children at those sites. Thousands of asylum seekers from countries ranging from Mexico and Venezuela to China and India have made their way to makeshift camps in remote sections of the California desert since last spring. That includes dozens of children. In a court document filed in late February, children's rights attorneys argued that federal immigration officials directed migrants to those camps but failed to provide adequate food, adequate water, shelter, and medical services for them. The Biden administration, however, argued that the minors and children had not been arrested by CBP and were therefore not in legal custody of the agency. But the attorney said in court filings that Border Patrol actions demonstrate that the agency has assumed authority over the migrants, pointing to agents regularly patrolling the camps, watching them with surveillance cameras, and transporting migrants to the tents. Attorneys added that agents placed wristbands on migrants, conducted body searches of the migrants, told them where to stand, and threatened them with losing their chance at asylum if they leave the camp. U.S. District Judge Dolly G concluded on Wednesday that the CBP, Customs and Border Protection, should not hold minors in or direct them to open-air sites except for the amount of time that the Department of Homeland Security reasonably requires to prepare the minor and or actively arrange for transport of the minor to a more suitable facility, as this behavior constitutes unnecessary delay. U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is reviewing the court's order. CBP will continue to transport vulnerable individuals and children encountered on the border with Mexico to its facilities as quickly as possible, according to a CBP spokesperson. U.S. District Judge Dolly G also ordered the CBP Juvenile Coordinator to file an interim report by 10th of May, with an update on the number of children and minors held in open-air sites and how the agency has complied with the court order.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in Hull.
Tour to pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, and everyone out there listening. This is Youth Station with IRIB English Radio, and this is your host Mustafa, and with me in the studio is...
Yeah, I am Bita, the co-host of my brother, and it's a pleasure to be here again at Youth Station.
Definitely, it's always good to hear. It's always nice to be able to talk to youth, I think, you know,
yeah,
it's something
yeah,
I enjoy doing.
I believe so.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So the topic I want to discuss today with you is related to prejudice, right?
Yeah, nice topic.
It's definitely, I think, a topic that's relevant in our society, right? We see many different forms of prejudices. For example, we might see religion prejudice in religion from a race point of view, from, you know, your nationality. It could even be something as, you know, we may have prejudice against our families. Sometimes it may be prejudice against our family members, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think there's any positives to it? Is it completely negative? You know, what can we do about these kind of prejudice that exist among us?
Yeah, it is a really difficult question that is it completely wrong or right to have prejudice? Mm. Because prejudice is a kind of blindly acceptance towards something. Mm. Not only you want to accept it blindly, but also you want other people and you want them to actually believe whatever beliefs that you have. And the thing that you mentioned, we have different categories of prejudice, like prejudice over your family, your nation, your country, your race, and about your beliefs. At the end of the day, it comes to the internal prejudice that is about your beliefs and so on. I believe that the goal of every human being is this self-awareness that we have to develop in ourselves. And this self-awareness comes out from knowledge. And right. When you have knowledge, prejudice, I believe, is meaningless in your world.
Definitely. You're right. I think a big part, a big source of prejudice among people is, you know, just lack of knowledge or understanding.
Exactly.
And, you know, I came across there's a few verses in the Quran which speak about prejudice.
Yeah.
You know, the way it exists. Like, and God says that, you know, He's created us in different, with different tongues and different colors. In one place He says, so that we get to know each other.
Yeah.
Right? So He presents these differences as a positive means for us to get to know each other. In another place He says that, you know, it's a sign for you. It's one of my signs for you that you recognize me because I created you in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So, we can take these things both positively and negatively, right?
Actually, you mentioned a beautiful verse of Holy Quran that we created you both from women and men, and the only difference that you have is about your piety and your virtue.
So we just have to go for a quick break, and then we'll come back for
okay. The
rest of the discussion. We've been discussing the topic of prejudice, you know, among religion, among race, in our families. Were you saying something right before we were going to the break?
Yeah, I wanted to mention a new dimension towards this prejudice that we're talking about. Actually, there is a specific thing in our culture or in our country mostly, but it's about all culture, you know. And this is the word qirah or qirah.
Actually, it's not only cultural. It's something that exists in our religion as well.
Yeah. It's a common religious belief among all of the Muslim ummah that there is something, a definition that we call it ghirat. There is no kind of equal word for this in English culture, but it's a combination of the bravery that you put on saving and supporting your pride about your family, about your religion, and actually it's a good dimension of prejudice, we can call it. And what do you think about it?
Right. It's definitely an interesting question. I don't know how much I would include it as part of prejudice, maybe, but it is. You can sort of see it that way. The whole problem with the word is that, like you said, there's no equivalent of it in English. But the idea is that you protect your honor, right? You protect your family's honor. You protect your, like, nation's honor. And yes, from that point of view, it is something positive. But the idea is that you don't think that you're better than others. You're trying to protect something which is good, right, from oppression.
Exactly.
So if there's oppression out there, then in that place, this type of prejudice can be very beneficial, I think.
Right? I do agree with that one, that there is so much good in this beautiful way of protecting your family, your ideas, and your beliefs. But it's good at this level, at this time, and at this boundary. When you cross these boundaries, and when your protection will have the tinge of prejudice, it will become something annoying and disgusting for other people.
The problem is that when the negativity comes in when it turns into arrogance, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I was just speaking to, you know, the driver that brought me here, and we were just saying that, you know, basically Shaitan, Iblis, right? That's what he did. He took like one attribute of himself, that he was made of fire.
Exactly.
And he took that as a, you know, being better than others. When we start thinking that we're better than others because of our race or religion, that's when it becomes an issue, right?
Yeah.
That's, so what would you say is a way to sort of remove that arrogance from people.
You know what, as you mentioned, the underlying root of this behavior of prejudice is this arrogance that we have over other people, that we think we're better, we think we're this and that. And again, there is a reason for this behavior of arrogance, which is the criteria and the standards that we are identifying for evaluating people. Okay, when you have difficult criteria for evaluating people, then it will lead to the road of prejudice. When you think, for example, being from the, I'm just giving you an example about the racism. When you are actually standardizing the colors of people as a value, then it will lead to ignorance.
Right.
I mean, so the first step to change this behavior is to change your basic beliefs about values.
Right.
And this is the point.
Okay.
And when you change your values, then your ignorance will be diminished, will
right.
be faded away. And the problem will be solved, I believe.
All right, so thank you so much. We'll
You're
have to
welcome.
Go for a break, and we'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Okay, so we're back for the break, and you know, I've lived in different countries, you know, and I've definitely faced prejudice and racism. One of the ways that I think that you can sort of get rid of prejudice in people is just spending time with them. So give you an example, when I was young, I was about 15, 16 years old, this is back in a Western country,
yeah.
And one of the guys in my class, you know, he was very racist, you know, he would call me like Pocky, and he would,
say
you're brown, and he would just push me around many times, and he ended up getting into a fight with me once, right? So he got beat up pretty badly by me, and then after that fight, okay, he became friends with me.
Yeah.
Okay, he started spending time with me.
Nice.
And then he realized that, you know, that I'm not very different from him or from others, right? I'm just another person.
Exactly.
And we became really good friends after that. So a lot of times you just need to be able to spend time with people, and that's it. That will solve the solution many times.
So you mentioned a really important fact, that sometimes the reason of this prejudice is lack of knowledge. When you don't know someone, when you see a stranger, your defensive mechanism is to put your guards high and feel like that person is your enemy and you have to fight with that person. But when you get close to the other people, other races, other religions, and other beliefs, you will understand that they are human beings too. They
right.
have some common beliefs as you. They have some kindness and humanity. For example, when I was younger, I thought, like, for example, foreigners were some strangers and aliens or something like that, that they have so many different cultural gap with us. But no, cultural gap is not something that much to make you feel you're different from other human beings. At the end of the day, we're all humans.
Right. And you know, part of that, a big part of that, you know, understanding that we're humans is going back to your point one about, you know, gaining knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think in today's world, we're living in a very globalized world, right? Like everyone's connected to everyone else. Most countries that you go to, there are people from different countries living there. So if somebody's still holding on to like sort of prejudiced beliefs, then, you know, they're doing themselves harm, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the other things that we don't realize, is that by being prejudiced against others, if you're thinking we're better, we're actually really causing ourselves harm.
Yeah.
You know, the other person isn't really losing anything. It's we're the ones that are losing something. We're not learning about others. We're not gaining from them, right?
Yeah.
So I think we need to be much more broad-minded and open-minded when we speak to others about others' beliefs, even if it's a non-Muslim, I feel. You know,
definitely.
We shouldn't have that kind of negative view towards others.
And I believe we have to consider another dimension of this topic, which is it doesn't mean that you have to accept the other people's beliefs, and
right.
or it doesn't mean that you have to be that open to change your own true beliefs into some deviated forms of that. It means that you have to protect your beliefs, and if there is opportunity for you, you can invite other people to the truth and the true path, and at the same time, you can be friends with them. There is no arrogance, there is no ignorance.
You know what happens in, like, back in Pakistan sometimes is that people get into very heated debates, right?
Yeah.
Because, and it could be even like Shia among Shia or Muslims among Muslims,
yeah.
who have like different ideas. They get like emotional, they like stop talking to each other sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, they become enemies of each other. Whereas what we see in our religion, or what I would say is the more common sense view, is that you can just sit down and have discussions with people.
Exactly.
Okay, you don't have to like convince others that you're right. You just need to share information with them. And based off of that, if your information is good, they'll automatically accept
like,
what you have to say. So we have to be, when I say we have to be open-minded, you're right. We don't have to accept the other person's like views, but we need to be respectful of their views, you know, so they can return that respect to us as well.
So the key word here, I believe, is respect. We have to respect in a mutual way. And also, we have to focus on our knowledge and on our reasoning in order to convince other people beautifully in what we think is right. And the other part is sometimes we have to give this chance to other people to exchange their beliefs, to exchange their ideas. Maybe we are the one who's wrong. Who knows?
Exactly. And I have been in many situations where I've realized that I was wrong, you know? So that's definitely something we all have to work on, by the way. You know, we all have a little bit of prejudice in us, I think.
Exactly.
And we all have to work on making ourselves better. Thank you so much for listening to this this episode, and please join us again.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, 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 Ya Latif,
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Many Palestinian voices have been silenced or marginalized on social media platforms amid the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza. Many of these users see TikTok as a medium to highlight the ongoing genocidal war crimes in the besieged Palestinian territory. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered the story and tells us more. Discussions about imposing a ban on TikTok, a short-form video platform owned by a Chinese company, have dominated the public discourse in the United States in recent weeks. The attempts to sell the popular application began during the previous U.S. administration headed by Donald Trump. The incumbent government has intensified the same battle. Recently, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill aimed at pressuring TikTok's Chinese developer, ByteDance, to divest from the company's U.S. operations or face expulsion from the United States. President Joe Biden said he would sign the bill if it passes the U.S. Senate as well. The legislation sets a strict timeline, giving ByteDance 6 months to sell off its U.S. assets or risk a ban in the country. However, final approval rests with the Senate and President Biden's signature. Named the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, it overwhelmingly passed in the U.S. House of Representatives with 352 votes in favor and only 65 votes against. Lawmakers advocating for the measure cited concerns that TikTok could potentially grant the Chinese government access to the private information of American citizens through its highly engaging algorithm. However, the move was slammed by TikTok's vast user base of 170 million Americans, as well as civil liberties groups and digital rights groups, who warned that a ban would impinge upon freedom of speech, as users are using it to amplify their anger and outrage against genocide in Israel's war in Gaza. While the White House and U.S. legislators push for action against the Chinese app, the fate of the bill hangs in the balance within the U.S. Senate. The upper chamber of the U.S. legislature presents a formidable hurdle where the path forward is far from straightforward. The legislation is set to undergo further scrutiny from lawmakers across the American political spectrum, and it is likely to face competition from alternative versions of a ban. In the broader context, amidst discussions of national security and data privacy, advocates for Palestine warn that the move is part of a broader pattern of technology censorship in line with the biggest and most sinister project shared by the U.S. government and the influential Israeli lobby. Many Palestinian voices have been silenced or marginalized on social media platforms amid the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza. Many of these users see TikTok as a medium to highlight the ongoing genocidal war crimes in the besieged Palestinian territory. U.S. lawmakers have expressed apprehension over the potential clandestine control of ByteDance by the Chinese government. Despite denials from the company, accusations persist regarding the sharing of sensitive user data with the Chinese government. In congressional testimony in March, TikTok's chief executive officer, Xu Chu, refuted such unsubstantiated claims, emphasizing that ByteDance is a private entity independent of Chinese government control. Xu Chu was quoted as saying at the time, "ByteDance is not owned or controlled by the Chinese government. It is a private company." Xu Chu condemned the disappointing legislative action, pledging vigorous defense measures, including legal recourse, to safeguard the app. Citing proactive data protection measures, TikTok remains optimistic about the U.S. Senate vote, highlighting the application's significant economic impact and its extensive user base. The app owners said in a statement recently, TikTok remains hopeful that the U.S. Senate will consider the facts, listen to their constituents, and realize the impact on the economy, 7 million small businesses, and the 170 million Americans who use our service. This process was secret and the bill was jammed through. For one reason, it's a ban. However, skepticism prevails among U.S. legislators, with Senator Marco Rubio alleging during a recent hearing on global threats that Chinese companies, including ByteDance, are subject to control by the Chinese government. Senator Marco Rubio underscored concerns regarding TikTok's utilization of advanced artificial intelligence algorithms fueled by American user data, raising apprehensions about privacy breaches and manipulation. In a bid to sever alleged Chinese influence, according to their claims, policymakers advocate for TikTok's sale to a Western entity, positing it as a viable solution, despite the social media platform's repeated denial, emphasizing the Chinese government's minimal stake in ByteDance. The case has been built against it in Washington. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. TikTok boasts of millions of users across the world who are fiercely against the Israeli-American genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza and have been posting videos in support of Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. In a recent report, The Independent cited a TikTok user, Awa, whose profile on the Chinese application gained a massive number of followers as she posted pro-Palestine content there. The 26-year-old from New York City was quoted as saying, "It has woken up the entire nation," adding, "TikTok has made us be able to reach so many people across the nation to understand what is truly happening to these people, that they are on occupation and that they are in genocide." According to a report in the Wall Street Journal published recently, one of the reasons behind the fresh push in the United States to ban TikTok was users engaging with content related to the Gaza genocide. Jacob Herbert, a member of the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, was quoted as saying that the six-month-long war was a turning point in the U.S. government's move to ban it. Jacob Herbert said people who historically hadn't taken a position on TikTok became concerned with how Israel was portraying in the videos and what they saw as an increase in anti-Semitic content posted on the app. Anthony Goldblum, a San Francisco-based data scientist, also referred to far more views for videos with pro-Palestine hashtags than posts with pro-Israel hashtags. Referring to Goldblum, the report said, while the ratio fluctuated, he found that at times it ran 69-1 in favor of videos with pro-Palestinian hashtags. With TikTok emerging as a powerful platform for sharing public opinion on Gaza, especially among the younger generation, pro-Israel lobbies such as the Anti-Defamation League have been spearheading the campaign to have it banned in the United States.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the blessed month of Ramadan, March 12, 2024. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. All praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and our Prophet, Abu al-Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and his untainted, pure, chosen, guiding, and well-guided, immaculate progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. You are very welcome here. Our session today, praise God, had the needed number of people. It was very good, complete, and comprehensive. I sincerely thank the organizers of this meeting as well as all the contributors who made this gathering splendid, meaningful, and remarkable. I would like to thank each and every one of those who recited the Quran and performed in this program. Fortunately, the recitation of the Quran being done in the correct manner and according to the rules and regulations of recitation is steadily becoming more widespread in the country. Perhaps there is not a day that goes by where I do not thank Almighty God for this great blessing.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Whenever I turn on the TV, one of the esteemed reciters of the Quran, some of whom are present here too, or a number of reciters who recite using the tartil, a method of recitation, are busy reciting. I sit and listen to them with great pleasure while thanking God. These have been granted to us due to the blessings of the revolution. When we compare our country with other Islamic countries, now I can't say for certain and I don't have exact statistics, but I believe that the number of well-reciting, proficient reciters in our country may exceed that of all other Islamic countries. Perhaps there may be some exceptions to this general rule in a certain country, but from what we hear and occasionally witness, the rest of the world cannot be compared to the skill and talent of our youth, to you, our beloved reciters, and our cherished ones. The value and greatness of reciting the Quran should be understood from the greatness of the Quran itself. You can see in the Quran itself what titles and designations are used to introduce the Quran. I have made a note of a few examples, such as the Great Quran, the Noble Quran, the Clear Quran, the Glorious Quran, the Wise Quran, the Healing Quran, the Merciful Quran, the Luminous Quran, and other similar titles.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Afghanistan is now battling an invisible foe that threatens its future generations.
the World Food Program has sounded the alarm on the rising tide of malnutrition cases, a crisis worsened by the country's ongoing economic challenges and reduced international aid. Marking the World Health Day, the Taliban's Minister of Public Health expresses concern over the malnutrition crisis, calling for international support.
It is clear that Afghanistan is one of the poor countries in the world. There is no doubt that children and mothers are grappling with malnutrition. We need the support of the world in combating the disaster. I call on the UNICEF, WHO and WFP to continue their assistance to our people with poor health conditions, especially those suffering from malnutrition.
The impact of international sanctions and the U.S. policies cannot be overlooked in understanding the gravity of the situation. That is a warning by pediatricians here in Afghanistan. Years of conflict have severely damaged the country's infrastructure, making it a challenge to provide adequate healthcare and nutrition to vulnerable groups. Moreover, recent cuts in international assistance as well as the Western-led sanctions are worsening things.
There are also some foreign factors exacerbating the malnutrition crisis in Afghanistan. Afghan assets that belong to Afghans and are meant to support our economy are frozen. We are witnessing a decline in international health assistance, especially to our children. Some international bodies continue to collaborate, but these are not sufficient. Some organizations that used to support families have ended their missions in Afghanistan.
A lot of people like me are coming to this hospital because their children are malnourished. I think everything boils down to a single problem, economic shortcoming. If our family had enough to eat, our children wouldn't become undernourished. People don't have money and they're not receiving aid anymore.
Experts emphasize that the need for immediate aid cannot be overstated. Afghan families are in desperate need of assistance to combat this malnutrition crisis. The international community must come together to provide the necessary resources and support to save lives and alleviate the suffering of the Afghan people. The economic crisis in Afghanistan is taking a toll on the health and well-being of the war-ravaged nation. Advocates warn that without a significant increase in support, the crisis will further deepen. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thousands came together for the annual International Kids Day March in the Canadian city of Toronto to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially those in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinian solidarity organizations and communities rallied across from the U.S. consulate, calling on Ottawa and Washington to act urgently to end the Israeli terror campaign and genocide and try to save as many lives as
possible. And this year it's especially important because people are motivated to come out in large numbers to bring an end to this genocide that's taking place in Gaza and underline their commitment to see a free Palestine from the river to the sea and a free Al-Quds, a free Jerusalem, free from Zionism and occupation.
Millions around the world are marching yesterday, today and tomorrow, all week. Thousands of cities and towns across the globe are making Al-Quds Day an international day, a call for justice and freedom, particularly for the Palestinian people as they are facing genocide and war crimes in Gaza.
The city has continued its heavy policing of pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Just 1 week ago, several participants were injured and six others were arrested in the annual Land Day commemoration by the Toronto police, who were captured on camera using excessive force.
So last week, people must have seen the videos by now, but the police completely attacked a peaceful rally, and there was horses involved, and this is what the police do. They're on the side of the Zionists, they terrorize people. You know, a protest, a simple, peaceful protest, you're not allowed. I mean, this is another example of the Palestine exception. That protest is good, it's a liberal, you know, it's a sign of democracy, except when you're talking about Palestine. You can't do that.
Participants also use Quds Day to condemn a recent deadly attack by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate building in Syria's capital, Damascus.
Well, Iran has been subjugated to all forms of aggression at the hands of the Zionist regimes and their backers. But the last crime that Israel have done in destroying the Iranian embassy in Damascus, that is a zero tolerance. Iran will respond, and I think that Iran is being called upon by the people to respond against this Israeli aggression.
As the targeted killing of civilians and the starvation campaign continue, a temporary resident visa program announced by the administration in Ottawa 3 months ago has failed to bring to Canada any Palestinian relatives of Canadians from Gaza. Against that backdrop, families and activists are pressuring for a real arms embargo on Israel. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Kutz Day was an aspiration for the organizers